Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this briefing on what the state is doing to slow the spread of coronavirus in Nebraska. As always, I want to remind people that even with the loosening of restrictions starting on Monday, going to things like from the 10-person rule to the 25-person rule, we still want people to follow our other guidelines or follow the new guidelines. So, for example, still a good idea to limit the number of trips you're taking from your household. We still want you to work in a socially distanced way. You know, keep that 6 foot of distance between you and other people. Respect, starting on Monday, the 25-person rule, 10-person rule this weekend. So continue to respect those. When you go out and shop, still a good idea to limit the number of times per week you're going out shopping and to do it by yourself. Don't take the whole family. And wear a mask when you go out shopping. That's always going to be a good idea. Please continue to help kids socially distance by playing those non-contact sports or limited contact sports. And then you can help seniors by shopping for them, but don't go visit in a long-term care facility, and exercise in an appropriately socially distanced way, but exercise daily, all good stuff. We want people to continue to remember these rules as we go into June, because as we loosen restrictions, the way this is gonna work is continuing to follow those other rules so that we do not allow the virus to spread in Nebraska. What we want to do is continue to preserve our hospital capacity. That means we need to continue to follow the rules with regard to social distancing, the 6 feet, all that sort of stuff. So please continue to do that. And with regard to hospital data, we still have, in our hospital beds, we have 41% capacity in the state, 42% capacity for ICU beds, and now 79% capacity for ventilators. So we still have a robust hospital capacity here in the state of Nebraska. All the restrictions we have done up until this date have worked to preserve our hospital system. And I want to thank Nebraskans who have been helping to do that. Please continue to do that. It's that voluntary compliance that makes a difference in us being able to preserve our hospital system so that everybody who needs that bed can get that bed when they need it. All right, testing schedule for next week for Test Nebraska. We're going to be in Chadron, Alliance, Scotts Bluff, Sydney, Broken Bow, Burwell, St. Paul, Valentine, O'Neill, Norfolk, Columbus, York, Lincoln, Fremont, Bellevue, and Omaha. And again, if you haven't signed up for testnebraska.com, please do so. It's one way that every Nebraskan can participate in the fight against the coronavirus by signing up for testnebraska.com. And of course, with all the locations we're gonna be at, we may be in a location in your area. So if you sign up, we're prioritizing people who are obviously symptomatic, healthcare workers, first responders, food processors, people who are 65 and older, all those folks will be prioritized to get testing. So please sign up for testnebraska.com. Now, one of the things that we have been asked to do is pull together new data with regard to how the pandemic is impacting Nebraskans here in the state. And we've been working with our folks in the Department of Health and Human Services to come up with some additional data. And Danette Smith, our CEO for the Department of Health and Human Services, is going to come up here and talk about some of the new data and some of what we're going to be publishing going forward. So, Danette, will you please come up and give us a briefing?
Thank you, Governor Ricketts, for allowing me to participate in today's press conference. Governor Ricketts has ensured that the Department of Health and Human Services, through my leadership as the CEO, is committed to serving the most vulnerable residents and ensuring health quality, health equality, and inclusion for all residents in Nebraska. This includes Nebraska residents with diverse ethnic and racial backgrounds, or communities of color. As we move forward, the department will be transparent in its data sharing and reporting. Today, I will be sharing a snapshot of the data by race and ethnicity and how COVID-19 has impacted the communities of color. It has been difficult to capture and synthesize the data that is complete by race and ethnicity. This is largely due to our inability to rely on one single data source and system here in Nebraska. We have had to rely on multiple systems to obtain some of the data points on race and ethnicity. Through our partnership with Nebraska Health Information Initiative, NEHI, a state health information exchange system, we will be able to collect, produce, and share real-time data about the populations we serve, specifically data regarding the impact of COVID-19. The department is keenly aware of how important it is to be transparent with data, as data can help drive our decisions for how we serve communities of color and all residents of Nebraska. Today, you will hear important data related to race and ethnicity, as well as COVID-19 positive cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. At the end of June 2020, DHS data dashboard will be on our website and will begin to report this information on a monthly basis. So let me set a little bit of the context for the data that we're going to be discussing this afternoon. According to the American Community Survey in 2018, our state demographic data makes up of the following data points: 87% Caucasian, 5% African American, 5% multiracial or other races, 2% Asian, 1% American Indian or Alaskan Native, and 0.1 for Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islanders. With respect to ethnicity, 89% non-Hispanic, with 11% being Hispanic or Latino. So let's turn a little bit to the COVID data according to our DHHS dashboard. Today in our state, we have approximately 13,261 positive COVID-19 cases. Of those positive cases, we have data on race and ethnicity for approximately 9,630 individuals. Of the 9,630 cases that we know of, 2,430 are specific to communities of color. And I'm going to break this down a little bit for you. 48% have identified as Hispanic or Latino. 10% have identified as other race or multiracial. 7% Asian. 7% African American. Less than 1% identifies as American Indian or Alaskan Native. And finally, less than 1% identifies as Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders. So we acknowledge the data incompleteness for the race and ethnicity category for our positive cases. And this is why we are working to improve our data collection and our validation process. There is an approximately 30% gap in the data that I just reported to you. Among all positive cases, when we look at gender, approximately even between females and males, females represent 51%, where males represent 49% who have been impacted by COVID-19. 83% of positive cases are among 5 age groups, representing individuals from the ages of 10 years old to 59. Each age group making up between 16 to 18% of positive cases, respectively. Among those patients hospitalized, overwhelmingly majority, 75%, are among those 50 years and older. Of COVID-19 related deaths, 87% are among those 60 years and older. As we focus on COVID-19 cases that resulted in hospitalizations, I'd like to share a little bit of data with you on that. 70% of those people that presented at the hospital were Caucasian. 40% that presented were Hispanic or Latino. 8% presented as Asian. 7% that presented at the hospital were African Americans, 5% multiracial or other races, 1% presented as American Indian or Alaskan Native, and less than 1% presented as Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islanders. Among the COVID-19 related deaths, 75% of deaths belong to the Caucasian population. 20% of those deaths were from Hispanic or Latino, 7% were African American, 6% were Asian, 3% were multiracial or other, and 1% were American Indian or Alaskan Native, and less than 1% with Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islanders. African Americans make up 5% of the population in the state and account for 7% of the COVID-19 deaths. Let's look at Hispanics. Hispanics make up 11% of the population in the state and account for 20% of the COVID deaths. Additionally, Hispanics make up 11% of the population but have represented 40% of our reported COVID hospitalization. Those who identify as Asians make up 2% of Nebraska's population but represent 8% of COVID hospitalizations. As you can see, some of our data is startling. We have a lot of work to do with our communities of color to ensure we understand their culture and linguistic needs so that we can better communicate and promote healthy living and ensure access to health care that will focus on prevention versus treatment. We continue to learn more about underlying health conditions such as hypertension, heart disease, diabetes, tobacco use. These underlying health conditions have a greater impact on recovery and treatment for COVID-19. This is especially true for communities of color, where they often have undiagnosed conditions due to lack of treatment and care and are grossly impacted by having a comorbidity diagnosis. This is why working with our local public health departments and our federally qualified health centers are so important and are so integral to providing preventive and primary care to the most vulnerable populations in our community. So we've been working hard in our effort to collect the data to be able to share it with Fidelity. I want to underscore that we will continue to collect, compile, and report data in a transparent manner. I realize the data I am presenting today is merely a snapshot of the data that informs us on the impact of COVID-19. Although this is a small amount of data to share, we are committed to improving our ability to report validated data and to ensure the data quality will have significant improvement. So here's what we're learning through the COVID-19. We have to do a better job of engaging communities of color, ensuring health access and equity for everyone. To this end, we have shared materials, including videos, in multiple languages. With the disparities among the Hispanic population, we have hired Spanish-speaking contract tracers, and the local public health departments have used bilingual community health workers to engage members of their respective communities. As the chief public health strategist, we must be robust and data-driven as we utilize and share data to inform and support the healthcare system, local public health departments, and FQHCs in serving the most vulnerable communities in our area where English is not the first language and all residents of Nebraska. As a partner in the healthcare system, we must develop strategies that highlight the importance of prevention and appropriate use of treatment, particularly as we fight the COVID-19 virus. So what is it that you can do? Well, the first thing you can do is get tested. Visit testnebraska.com for testing sites or contact your local public health department. We are doing approximately 1,300 tests per day through Test Nebraska, and on average, we're very close to getting to the governor's goal. On average, we are testing approximately 23 persons in total over the last 3 weeks. When you go to get tested, I want to remind you, bring a friend, because sometimes getting tested is frightening. Bring a friend, bring your mask, and remember, social distance. Know your health status. That's important. That you understand your health status and how that plays prominently in your life. Many persons of color are employed in designated essential jobs. Understanding your health is critical to good, healthy living and maintaining a balance between health and also mental health being. Be sure to seek treatment from your healthcare provider regarding any health concerns and symptoms you may have from COVID-19. Again, Governor, thank you so much for letting me present this afternoon. More data to come. We will keep you informed. Please make sure that you refer to the DHHS website at the end of June, where you will see the information that I've discussed this afternoon and much, much more. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. One of the things that has been a constant in our press briefings here is Francis, who's been doing our sign interpretation. And today we've invited John Weivel, who is the executive director for the Nebraska Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. And so he's going to talk a little bit about how this pandemic has impacted that community, especially when we're all supposed to be wearing masks. So, John, would you please come up and give us a few words on that?
Thank you, Governor Ricketts, for allowing me the opportunity to be here at the press conference. On behalf of the deaf and hard of hearing community, we want to thank you, Governor, for striving for the very best in communication access in your press conferences, with having one of the best interpreters in the state doing the press conferences, as well as insisting on captioning in the press conference to ensure that all Nebraskans are aware of the very important public information. The information being disseminated has a wide viewing audience within our community. Helen Keller, a famous deaf-blind advocate, in describing being deaf and blind to members of the hearing community, has said that being blind cuts you off from things. Being deaf cuts you off from people. And one thing that can definitely cut you off from people is having masks like this, being covering your mouth and attempting to communicate and understand, because for deaf and hard of hearing people, a large percentage of the cues in picking up language and information come from the ability to lip read and also to watch the mouth and the facial expressions. Why this matters in Nebraska is that 20% of our population has some form of hearing loss, diagnosed or not. That translates to 1 out of 5 Nebraskans. And to put it another way, 3 out of every 1,000 births that are born in Nebraska, a child has some form of a hearing loss. There are 892 children that have been identified as the primary disability of being deaf or hard of hearing in the public schools, based on the information provided by the Department of Education. 1 out of 3 over the age of 65 have a hearing loss, and that number increases as you get older. So there's a number of different losses. There's 1% of the population that is deaf that communicate by sign. There are those that become deaf later in life, and those a variety of service-connected injuries for their service to our country, or listening to too much rock music, or the number of different reasons. So one of the things that we want you to be aware of is very simple, is be aware of the communication barrier and have a communication plan. So some of the recommendations that the commission would like to make is for you to consider is the opportunity for clear mask. The mask that I am showing you has been provided by the Department of Corrections to the commission by Cornhusker State Industries. It's to show the clear mask that people can pick up some of the lip reading and facial cues. There are some other mask providers out there that provide clear surgical masks that would allow it very happen. In today's environment, we're very acutely aware, especially with the chief medical officer being here, about the importance of communication in a medical setting. And if you can't hear or understand what's being said behind the muffled words, it becomes very difficult. We also see with first responders, whether it be paramedics, firefighters, or law enforcement, a lack of communication can greatly enhance the risk of escalation or unfortunate outcome. Public schools, they need communication when the student go back to school and be able to do that, or the grocery store, the bank, your drug store, or, you know, at some point we'll be able to go back and watch the Husker game. Other things that if you don't have the clear mask, we'll be thinking about your cell phone or tablet. If there's a communication barrier, type out the message and show it. Or if you're like me, my wife sends me to the store with a list of things to get. And so if I can't find it, I point to the list because of the communication barrier. If not, there's pen and pencil. So the takeaway for all of you is to to make sure within a mask environment is be aware and have a communication plan for businesses and government. And we thank Governor Ricketts for the opportunity to be here and to chair that, and also thanking him and his cabinet for leading the way and showing how communication should be done in this very challenging, unique time and the new normal that we'll be seeing for several months to come. So thank you very much. And thank you, Governor.
Thank you very much, John, for being here today. And John told me before we walked in here today that Frances actually sits on his board, and so is kind of his boss, so he has to say nice things about her. Hey, Taylor, you did not leave the list of questions up here. Do you have a list of questions for me that were emailed in ahead of time? I don't think I got them up here. Danette, did you pick up my questions? That's okay.
There's only two. That's fine.
It'd be hard to answer these questions. All right. So we'll go and get ahead into questions and answers. John Kipper, KMTV. I'm wondering if you have a response to the recent death of George Floyd in Minnesota. Protests have taken place around the U.S. already, and some are being planned this weekend in Nebraska. What would you tell those planning to protest? First of all, I have not seen the video myself, but from the news reports, this is an egregious violation of Mr. Floyd's rights, and the officer needs to be charged, and this needs to go to court and be adjudicated through our system of justice. But I think some of the comments you've seen from our own law enforcement officials about how bad this is and how it reflects poorly on law enforcement and, again, creates that distrust between our communities of color and law enforcement. This is really, again, just another terrible case here in the United States. So with regard to the demonstrators this weekend, encourage them to exercise their First Amendment rights in a peaceful way, and certainly understand, again, why a peaceful demonstration is called for. Mike McKnight, WWT, will guidelines in writing be posted soon, and when? They're looking for rules on guest masks, how drinks should be served, dancing with the bride and groom, first dance, allowed or not allowed. So this is with regard to weddings and the DHM we have. So with regard to receptions, again, people can have guests, 50% of that occupied or rated occupancy, but the guests all have to be sitting at tables 6 feet apart, six people per table. There's no social dancing, so no dancing allowed. Now, if the bride and groom dance, that's different, right? They're getting married, they're sitting next to each other at dinner, presumably there's a first kiss there. So the bride and groom dancing is not part of the no dancing thing here, but come on, folks, let's use our common sense about what we're trying to accomplish. If you're serving drinks, drinks have to be served at the table. You can look at the bar guidelines for how that's being done. So again, the whole idea here is to prevent large groups of people from mixing. That's how we slow the spread of the virus, to make sure large groups of people do not mix. So when you're putting together your wedding reception, let's just think about how we avoid those large groups from mixing. Obviously, a bride and groom are not a large group, so they can dance. Okay, Taylor, those are the only two that I think I had up here. Did you have others that were texting in?
Paul from Fox 42 wants to know about guidance for martial arts studios and gymnastics studios allowing them to remain open. Can you confirm that that's true, and what rule is in place?
Paul from Fox wants to know about martial arts studios and gymnastics studios and about them remaining open. Again, neither one of those is closed through the pandemic. And if you look at the DHM, what that talks about is martial arts competitions and gymnastic competitions. So martial arts studios and gymnastic studios, again, businesses remain open. In fact, they can go to 25 people, 6 feet apart, properly distanced, starting on Monday. But again, no contact. And again, it's the competitions that we're prohibiting where, again, you'd have contact and so forth. That's what those gymnastics and those martial arts competitions are the ones prohibited. The studios themselves can remain open and they actually go up to 25 people.
We had a couple people, Michelle Bandura and Christina Stella, both wanted to know the updated meatpacking numbers.
Michelle Bandura and
Christina Stella
from NET. Dr. Anto, can you come up and talk about those updated numbers, please?
So for meat processing facilities, the cases now are 2,988, as identified. as positive. Deaths are 11 confirmed cases, and hospitalizations are 140 of those tested positive.
Thank you, Dr. Anto.
Brandon from NTV would like to know, there's folks planning to demonstrate this weekend regarding working conditions for meat processing workers, prisoners, Native communities, and immigrants. They say that safety measures are not enough. What do you have to say about their protest? Is there any way to reassure the workers that they're being protected?
So Brandon from NTV says there's protesters this weekend with regard to food processing plants, prisons, I think other communities that are going to be more at risk. And with regard to these at-risk communities, we have a number of different plans that we're working on to be able to mitigate the spread of coronavirus. So, for example, we've talked numerous times with regard to what we're doing with regard to food processing facilities and the UNMC's, you know, meat processors COVID-19 playbook and the best practices that we're working there. And we talked yesterday about in many of those communities, if you look right now, we're in single digits as far as new cases daily in counties like, you know, Dakota and Saline and Dawson and so forth. So again, those numbers have been mitigated in those counties. And we're continuing to monitor this and continue to engage with that. We've got a plan for our Department of Corrections. UNMC and the folks there have been visiting our long-term care facilities and working with that. They've been visiting shelters. So all these places where we have these at-risk communities, we've been visiting and working with the people who manage those facilities to be able to come up with plans to be able to mitigate the spread of virus in those communities.
The Custer County Chief has a few questions. They want to know, when should someone be retested? Does that depend on their lifestyle, work, or travel? And is retesting a part of Test Nebraska?
So the Custer County Chief wants to know, when should people get retested? Should be a part of their lifestyle, work, or travel? And is retesting a part of Test Nebraska? So yes, you can get retested as part of Test Nebraska. And generally, you should get retested if something changed, right? If you develop symptoms, go back into testnebraska.com and update your assessment so that it shows that you've got symptoms now. Because that's one of the things, of course, that we prioritize to be able to get testing is having those symptoms. If you were exposed to somebody who you know has coronavirus, that would be another change that you should go update your assessment and get retested. So that's how it would work with testnebraska.com is if you have a change, something that has to do with symptoms or exposure, go get your assessment updated, and then you'll, if you qualify, you'll be allowed to be able to go get that, schedule another test.
Custer County Chief also says that there are folks in Broken Bow who went to National Guard testing thinking that they could be charged as much as $150 to be tested. What can be done to help people better understand that testing is being done at no charge?
So the Custer County Chief is asking, there were some people who went to Broken Bow for the National Guard testing we were doing through testnebraska.com and thought they were going to get charged as much as $150. What can be done to let people know it's free? And again, this is one of the reasons why we do these press conferences and press briefings, and certainly encourage all the media to get the message out that everything we're doing through testnebraska.com is free. I think we talked about this yesterday, as a matter of fact. Oh, we talked about it yesterday in the Spanish language briefing, that the testing is free, that the care provided for any treatment for coronavirus is going to be free. So please, we want people to get tested and go seek that care.
And Bailey Bischoff has several questions about the regional center that I think Dan can answer.
All right, so Bailey Bischoff with who?
1011
has questions about the Lincoln Regional Center. I'm going to call Danette to come up and answer those. And please remember to repeat the question into the microphone so people can hear.
Okay, thank you.
Employees at LRC that masks aren't being provided. Are people at the facility being provided proper equipment, and should they all be wearing masks?
So the question is, are proper PPE equipment being provided to the staff, is how I understand the question. So the answer to that is absolutely. We have enough PPE, both masks and gowns, to make sure that when we are dealing with the COVID-19 virus there at the LRC, that we are not only protecting our staff, but we're also protecting the patient.
Her second question is, she heard that a patient who had coronavirus and another patient were transported together, which exposed that second patient. Did this happen, or should it have happened?
So the question is, There's an understanding that there were two patients, and both of those patients were transported together, and should that have occurred?
And one was positive.
And one was positive. Okay, one was positive. So the answer to that is that during that transport, both patients were transported separately, and there was no interaction.
She said that she's hearing many employee concerns. What is your response to employees who are concerned about going to work? What should be done to keep them safe?
So the question is, what should be done to keep staff safe? And so here's the answer to that. I think that the administration, as well as myself and all the executive team members, are very concerned about the safety of our staff. I know that the administration out at the LRC are working diligently to make sure that they have appropriate schedules, appropriate PPEs, so that we don't have any transferring of staff from building to building. So there is a commitment on the part of the leadership team with DHHS to make sure all of our staff are safe.
One more question. Are you able to confirm how many staff and how many patients at LRC have been tested positive?
Not at this time, but I can certainly get her that information.
That's all our question.
Okay.
Dr. Wall and another reporter from NTV are asking, are you aware of the cancellation of the high school rodeo in Lincoln? Do you have an opinion about that? I think there's some confusion about whether the state or local officials advised on the cancellation.
So the question went from Don Walt was with regard to the cancellation of the National High School Finals Rodeo. It was supposed to be held at the Lancaster Event Center. And whether or not, you know, how this all came about, my understanding is the Lancaster Event Center submitted a plan to the Lancaster Public Health Department, and that the Lancaster Public Health Department said the plan was not sufficient. And so the Lancaster events then decided to cancel the rodeo based upon the feedback they'd received from the Lancaster Public Health Department. So the state did not get involved in that decision with regard to the plan. I don't believe we even saw the plan. So that was something that was handled at the local level between the Lancaster Event Center and the Lancaster Public Health Department.
Grant Schulte has two questions. How do we intend to use the rate and ethnicity data that we're reporting today?
So Grant wants to know about how we're going to plan to use the race and ethnicity data we reported today. And I think Danette already touched upon that, just with regard to looking at additional ways that we can engage those communities of color to make sure that we're doing a good job of getting out the word with regard to social distancing and how they can get appropriate health care and get testing and all the sorts of things that will help us prevent the spread of the virus here in Nebraska, and specifically with regard to those communities. So we will continue to look for ways, such as we've done, as having the Spanish language briefings that we've had, the videos that we put out in seven different languages, you know, all those sorts of steps, and look for additional ways that we can do that. And Dan, I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to add to that.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
How good a job do you think the state is doing right now in reaching these minority populations, and where do you think the state is falling short?
How good a job is the state doing, and where are we falling short? Well, I think that we are doing a good job of getting out into those communities. We're leveraging the local health clinics, for example, and local community leaders to be able to get the word out. As Danette mentioned, we're hiring bilingual contact tracers so that we can call folks and be able to communicate in languages other than English. So I think we've taken a number of steps to be able to do it. But just like everything else in my administration, we always look for continuous improvement. What are other things we can do a better job on? So we're going to look for those areas. I don't have any specific areas I can tell Grant right now where we can do a better job, but we will continue to look for those areas where we can find ways to improve and engage those communities to be able to do it.
Dave Schroeder, finally from KRBN, wants to know if we are aware of any cases of the multi-stem inflammatory syndrome in children associated with coronavirus here in Nebraska.
Dave Schroeder from KRVN wants to know about an inflammatory disease in children. Are we aware of any in Nebraska? I have read some, we've read a little bit or heard a little bit about it from other states. I don't believe we have any here in Nebraska, Dr. Antone. No, we don't have any here in Nebraska. Okay, great. So questions from inside the room. Lee.
I had a question for Danette about some of the... Communities of color disproportionately affected based on the populations, the numbers that you gave from populations of the communities of color to how much they are actually making up the COVID positive patient percentage?
Repeat that question one more time.
Sure.
So I can repeat it too.
Yeah, yeah. Is it alarming to you to see the communities of color disproportionately affected based about COVID and the numbers of populations overall being affected?
So I'm going to paraphrase it. The question is, am I concerned about the disproportionality of the populations here in Nebraska? Always it's alarming. It's always alarming to see where the data doesn't quite match up. But I think here's the good news. We have an opportunity to improve. We have an opportunity to work with people in the community, to get to know them, to understand what their health care needs are. And then, as I said earlier in my remarks, making sure that we have consistent access to health care, because that's the most important thing that will change those numbers that you heard me report on today.
How have you guys been able to make sure everyone that's tested positive, you've been able to accurately find which category they fall into,
so,
in terms of race?
Say that again.
How have you guys been able to accurately get a hold of everyone that's tested positive, and you gave the lists of the race and the breakouts of that percentage? How have you been able to accurately get access to everyone and get those percentage breakouts?
So what I hear you asking me is, the data that I presented, how are we making sure that we're getting out to those populations, making sure that if they test positive, we have then been able to make sure they get treatment?
I think he's asking, how are you collecting the data?
How am I collecting? Okay. We're collecting the data. We have four different data sites that I have that we're using to be able to collect that data. One is NEHI, one is our own surveillance system, and we have two others. So there's four that we use to be able to collect that data.
And I think it's accurate to say that's self-reported data, is that right,
Dana? Yes, it is.
Self-reported. The contact users call the person and they report it back.
Yes.
Why has it been difficult to collect this information? You only have partial information, and why are we going to have to wait until the end of June to have it
incorporated in the dashboard? So Martha's asking, why has it taken us so long to get the data and then to be able to present it on the dashboard? And Martha, the simple answer to that is I'm having to use four different databases. And along with using those databases, I have to synthesize the data. I have to make sure that the data is correct before I can post it. What we're trying to do is to honor a commitment to the community and to the state of Nebraska that as we get the data, as we synthesize the data, and it is accurate, we want to post it to be able to show the community so that we can make appropriate decisions to help those communities of color.
But are these different sources than you're using to collect data on coronavirus cases in general? I mean, what makes this particular aspect of the data so difficult to collect?
Well, I think that this is the first time, to my knowledge, and I certainly can get more information for you, Martha, but this is really the first time that we have concentrated on making sure that we are collecting racial and ethnic data. To my knowledge, we've never done this before in a consistent manner. And so what you hear me saying is that we want to collect the data. We want it to be consistent. We want it to be accurate before we post it. And so we want to be able to use those four databases that I talked about earlier as a way to make sure that the data is good, it's been cleansed, it's synthesized, and now it's ready for us to show the public.
Are you using these same four sources for things like age groups or male, female?
Yes, we are.
And has that been a problem?
So the question that Martha's asking me is, the databases that I'm using, have I been using them for ages to discriminate between ages, right? One age to another. And the answer to that is yes. It's the same database.
Has that been difficult?
It has not.
And that, does it get back again to the self-reporting of the data?
Some of it is getting back to the self-reporting, but also where we receive who we receive the data from as well. So it's both. Yes.
You said that some of the numbers were staggering from the data you collected. Could you just say specifically what stuck out most as what was the
sure.
staggering findings?
So the question is, what data is staggering that I reported, right? Okay, so where I thought that it was most impactful to me is where we have data that shows how many Latinos are in our community, yet the volume of them going to the hospital is like at 46 or 48%. The number of African Americans who are here in Nebraska, and then we showed a rate of about 7% of them being involved in the hospital. Those are things that are staggering, because what that says is that there's some disparity in how people are accessing healthcare. And are they accessing healthcare? And we do know that for communities of color, it's very, very difficult to access healthcare because we have cultural and folklore beliefs about going into a hospital setting. And so sometimes it's very discouraging to get people to take care of both their physical health and their mental health. Yes, Martha.
As far as accessing health care, would it be helpful if Nebraska had Medicaid expansion at this point to encourage people to be able to get care?
So Martha's question is, would it be helpful for people to have Medicaid expansion so that they have access? And Martha, you know, that remains to be seen in October. I don't know that I can answer that question right now.
Might be a good idea to remind people, though, Dan, that everybody who wants to go to the hospital for coronavirus will get treated
yes.
at no cost.
Yeah. So everybody going to the hospital will get treated at no cost. Yes.
A question for Governor Ricketts, if you don't mind. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In wake of the events that happened in Minneapolis, I don't know if there's been talks amongst the Omaha Police Department, Lincoln Police Department, your state patrol, county sheriff's departments, those degrees, of looking at some of the trainings that they do. I have no idea of what departments do here in relation to Minneapolis, of course, but has there been any thoughts of reevaluation or looking at training practices at all?
Well, the question was with regard to what happened in Minneapolis, are we reviewing what we're doing here in Nebraska? And I have not had a conversation with Colonel Bulldog about that, but I will tell you right now, just based upon what I know about Chief Schmaderer in Omaha and Chief Bleimeister here in Lincoln, that they have great proactive law enforcement agencies. They've got great relationships with the communities. And certainly, you know, we're always looking for ways to be able to improve what we're doing. So I think if there's learnings that come out of this from Minneapolis, they will be looking to adopt those, you know, improved practices or best practices. But I would say, again, I just refer you to the great relationships that Chief Schmader and Chief Bleimeister have and what a good job they do with their agencies. Yeah.
I just have another question for Bailey, who was talking about the regional center. She said that she's being told that there are staff still working in and out of different buildings throughout the day, giving meds or meals. That includes the COVID unit as well.
So I'm sorry, so what's the question there again?
So she was talking about the regional center. She said she's being told there are staff still working in and out of all different buildings, giving meds and meals, and that includes going in and out of the COVID.
All right, so if I understand the question, then what Bailey is saying is that there are staff that are moving back and forth between the COVID unit and the non-COVID units, giving food and medication and things like that. Danette, can I ask you to come up and address that?
So I know that my administrative staff are trying to minimize the amount of movement between two buildings. There has been, in the last, I know, week, intensive scrutiny of our staffing, our temporary staff, to help us minimize the transfer between two buildings serving meals. So we're trying to do all we can to minimize that. I can't say that every time we're successful, but one of the things that we've done is we've asked staff to be able to assist us in being able to take care of the patient that's experiencing COVID-19 and those other patients in the other buildings.
Martha.
In the interest of clarity, can you addressed the bride and groom after weddings, having a first dance. What about the father-daughter, mother-son dances? Are those also acceptable?
So, again, folks, Martha's asking about, well, what about, you said bride-groom can dance, but then what about the father-daughter and the bride, blah, 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 blah. Here's the deal, folks. Use common sense. Again, what we're trying to do is avoid the mixing of large groups of people. If you've got the father and daughter sitting at the table already, then that's fine. But here's the deal. We can't have a bunch of people getting up and dancing. That's going to be those big big groups of people moving together or mixing together. And you don't want to be the wedding that when we do our contact trace, when we find out that a big outbreak of coronavirus was related to your wedding. That's not going to be a good wedding memory. So we want people to, you know, use common sense and good judgment, keep six people at a table, keep tables 6 feet apart, follow the rules and the guideline, and have your wedding reception that way, but don't have big groups of people who are mixing together.
I got a note from Amy Dickerson at the Lancaster Event Center. She just wants people to know that the rodeo was canceled due to an order from Lancaster County Health. It was not a decision by the Event Center.
Okay, so Amy from Lancaster County Event Center wants to know that it was actually the Lancaster County Public Health Department that canceled the event. It was not a decision to cancel it by the Lancaster County Event Center. Thank you for that clarification, Amy. Appreciate it. Other questions? Yeah, Lee.
June 1st, rolling around right around the corner, Greenwich Forest here. Can you give any idea of hospital data and how you expect it to go up, down, what your expectations are, if you expect it to stay flatlined, or yeah, just your thoughts on that?
Continue to monitor it. One of the things that we saw, the question was, what do we expect with June 1st coming around and what's going to happen with hospital data? We're going to continue to monitor it. Again, if people continue to follow the rules like 6 foot distancing, when you go to the store, wear a mask, wash your hands often, you know, avoid groups larger than 25 people starting on Monday, we'll be able to continue to control the spread of the virus here in the state. One of the things that we saw was that people had, we believe our working theory here is that people would put off some health care. For example, maybe you had a heart condition and you put off going to the hospital, but you couldn't put it off any longer. So if you actually look at the data, some of the impact was more cases of coronavirus in the Omaha hospitals, but it wasn't all related to that, right? So we've seen, we're using up less than or approximately 10% of the hospital beds are for coronavirus patients. That means 90% that are out there are either not being used or they're being used for something else. So that's really where we saw, I think, kind of the increase as well was other uses of the hospital, which, of course, we need to treat those people as well. So we'll continue to monitor it and continue to make sure that we're providing those hospital beds. But again, we need Nebraskans to be able to again, continue to follow those rules so that we can slow the spread of the virus. Any other questions? Martha, I looked at you. Must be Friday afternoon. Everybody wants to go home. All right, folks, well, I won't make you sit here any longer. Thank you all very much. Again, John Weivel, thank you very much for joining us here today. Danette, thank you very much for joining us here today. And thank you to all the Nebraskans who have been working to slow the spread of coronavirus here in Nebraska. We appreciate all the work that you've been doing. Again, as we look toward Monday and the relaxation of some of those restrictions, we continue to need people to do the right thing. Nebraskans have been great. You all have followed the guidelines we put out there with regard to making sure that you're slowing down the spread of the virus here. We've maintained our hospital capacity. Everybody who has needed that hospital bed, that ICU bed, that ventilator, has been able to get that facility when they have needed it. And so that's continuing what we're going to need to do is to make sure we slow the spread of the virus so that we can provide that access in our hospital system. So please, as we go into June, continue to keep that 6 foot distance between you and other people. Wear a mask when you go to the public. That's going to be a good idea. Wash your hands frequently. If you're sick, stay home. And everybody, you know, around you, make sure that you're isolating from them, staying home. Sign up for testnebraska.com. That's going to be another way to be able to fight this. So please continue to follow those as we go into June so we can continue to slow the spread of the virus here in our state and continue to maintain that hospital capacity. Thank you all very much. It looks like we might have some nice weather this weekend. So everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy the nice weather, and we'll see you back here on Monday. And remember, next week it will be Monday and Thursday at 2 p.m. Central Time for our briefings. Spanish briefing will be at 3 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. Have a great weekend.